dying.
Dude was not into it at all. As soon as we were through, he'd be back at his desk in no time flat, almost clinging to it. Tried everything he could to weasel out of our runs. Started getting up at 5, so when I got up, he'd already be at his computer. Could claim he was in the middle of this amazingly important chapter. Write it later, bitch! After about our 4th run, he actually got down on his knees. Please, Junior, he said. I can't. I snorted. Just go get your fucking shoes. I knew shit wasn't easy for him. I was callous, but not that callous. I saw how it was. You think people hate a fat person? Try a fat person who's trying to get thin. Brought out the motherfucking Balrog in niggers. Sweetest girls you'd ever see would say the vilest shit to him on the street. Old ladies would jabber, "You're disgusting, disgusting," and even Harold, who'd never shown much in the way of anti-Oscar tendencies, started calling him Jabba the Butt, just because. It was straight up nuts. Okay, people suck, but what were his options? O had to do something. 24/7 at a computer writing sci-fi monster pieces, darting out to the student center every now and then to play video games, talking about girls but never actually touching one? What kind of life was that? For fuck's sake, we were at Rutgers. Rutgers was just girls everywhere. And there was Oscar, keeping me up at night talking about the Green Lantern. Wondering aloud, if we were orcs, wouldn't we at a racial level imagine ourselves to look like elves? Dude had to do something. He did, too. He quit. It was a nutty thing, really. 4 days a week we were running. I put in 5 miles myself, but with him it was just a little every day. But he was doing okay, all things considered. Building, you know? And then right in the middle of one of our jogs, out on George Street, and I looked back over my shoulder, saw that he had stopped. Sweat running down everywhere. "Are you having a heart attack?" "I am not," he said. "Then why ain't you running?" "I've decided to run no more."
"Why the fuck not?"
"It's not going to work, Junior."
"It ain't going to work if you don't want it to work."
"I know it's not going to work."
"Come on, Oscar, pick up your goddamn feet."
But he shook his head. He tried to squeeze my hand and then walked to the Livingston Avenue stop, took the double E home. The next morning I prodded him with my foot, but he didn't stir. "I will run again no more," he intoned from under his pillow. I guess I shouldn't have gotten mad. Should have been patient with the herb. But I was pissed. Here I was, going the fuck out of my way to help this fucking idiot out, and he was pissing it back in my face. Took this shit real personal. 3 days straight I badgered him about the running, and he kept saying, "I'd rather not, I'd rather not." For his part, he tried to smooth it over. Tried to share his movies and his comic books, and to keep up the nerdly banter. Tried to go back to how it was before I started the Oscar Redemption program. But I wasn't having it. Finally dropped the ultimatum. "You either run or that's it."
"I don't want to do it anymore! I don't!"
Voice rising. Stubborn. Like his sister.
"Last chance," I said.
I was sneakered up and ready to roll, and he was at his desk, pretending not to notice. He didn't move. I put my hands on him.
"Get up."
And that was when he yelled,
"You leave me alone!"
Actually shoved me. I don't think he meant it, but there it was. Both of us astounded. Him trembling, scared, sick, me with my fists out, ready to kill. For a second, I almost let it go, just a mistake, but then I remembered myself. I pushed him, with both hands. He flew into the wall, hard. dumb, dumb, dumb. 2 days later, Lola calls from Spain, 5 o'clock in the morning.
What the fuck is your problem, Junior?
Tired of the whole thing, I said without thinking, oh, fuck off, Lola.
Fuck off?
The silence of death.
Fuck you, Junior. Don't ever speak to me again.
Say hi to your fiancé for me, I tried to jeer, but she'd already hung up.
Motherfucker!
I screamed, throwing the phone into the closet. And that was that. The end of our big experiment. He actually did try to apologize a couple of times in his Oscar way, but I didn't reciprocate. Where before I'd been cool with him, now I just iced him out. No more invitations to dinner or a drink. Acted like roommates act when they're beefing. We were polite and stiff. And where before we would jaw about writing and shit, now I didn't have nothing to say to him. Went back to my own life. Back to being the Il Sucio. Had this crazy burst of Toto energy. Was being spiteful, I guess. He went back to eating pizzas by the 8 slice and throwing himself kamikaze style at the girls. The boys, of course, sensed what was up, that I wasn't protecting the gordo anymore, and swarmed. I like to think it wasn't too bad. The boys didn't slap him around or nothing, didn't steal his shit, but I guess it was pretty heartless any way you slice it. You ever eat Toto? Melvin would ask, and Oscar would shake his head, answer decently no matter how many times Mel asked. Probably the only thing you ain't eaten, right? Harold would say, Tú no eres nada dominicano. But Oscar would insist unhappily, I am Dominican. I am. It didn't matter what he said. Who the hell, I ask you, had ever met a domo like him? Halloween he made the mistake of dressing up as Doctor Who. Was real proud of his outfit, too. When I saw him on Easton, with 2 other writing section clowns, I couldn't believe how much he looked like that fat homo Oscar Wilde, and I told him so. You look just like him, which was bad news for Oscar because Melvin said, Oscar Wow? ¿Quién es Oscar Wow? And that was it. All of us started calling him that. Hey, Wow, what you doing? Wow. You want to get your feet off my chair? And the tragedy? After a couple of weeks, dude started answering to it. Fool never got mad when we gave him shit. Just sat there with a confused grin on his face. Made a brother feel bad. A couple times after the others left, I'd say, You know we was just kidding, right, Wow? I know, he said wearily. We cool, I said. Thumping him on the shoulder. We cool. On the days his sister called and I answered the phone, I tried to be cheerful, but she wasn't buying. Is my brother there? Was all she ever said. Cold as Saturn.
End of disc 5.
These days I have to ask myself what made me angrier. That Oscar the fat loser quit? Or that Oscar the fat loser defied me. And I wonder, what hurt him more? That I was never really his friend? Or that I pretended to be? That's all it should have been. Just some fat kid I roomed with my junior year. Nothing more. Nothing more. But then Oscar the dumbass decided to fall in love. And instead of getting him for a year, I got the motherfucker for the rest of my life. You ever see that sergeant portrait Madame X? Of course you have. Oscar had that one up on his wall, along with a Robotech poster and the original Akira one sheet, the one with Tetsuo on it and the words, Neo Tokyo is about to explode. She was drop dead like that. But she was also fucking crazy. If you'd lived in Demarest that year, you would have known her. Jenny Munoz. She was this Boricua chick from East Brick City who lived up in the Spanish section. First hardcore goth I'd ever met. In 1990, us niggers were having trouble wrapping our heads around goths, period, but a Puerto Rican goth? That was as strange to us as a black Nazi. Jenny was her real name, but all her little goth buddies called her La Diablesse. And every standard a dude like me had, this Diabla short-circuited. Girl was luminous. Beautiful Jibara skin, diamond-sharp features, wore her hair in the super-black Egypto cut, her eyes caked in eyeliner, her lips painted black, had the biggest, roundest tits you've ever seen. Every day Halloween for this girl. And on actual Halloween, she dressed up as, you guessed it, a dominatrix. Had one of the gay guys in the music section on a leash. Never seen a body like that, though. Even I was hot for Jenny first semester, but the one time I tried to mack on her at the Douglas Library, she laughed at me. And when I said, don't laugh at me, she asked, why not? Fucking bitch. So anyway, guess who decided that she was the love of his life? Who fell head over heels for her because he heard her playing Joy Division up in her room, and surprise, he loved Joy Division too. Oscar, of course. At first, dude just stared at her from afar and moaned about her ineffable perfection. Out of your league, I snarked. But he shrugged, talked to the computer screen. Everybody's out of my league. Didn't think nothing of it, until a week later when I caught him putting a move on her in Brower Commons. I was with the boys, listening to them grouse about the Knicks, watching Oscar and La Diablesse on the hot food line, waiting for the moment she told him off. Figured if I'd gotten roasted, she was going to vaporize his ass. Of course, he was full on, doing his usual Battle of the Planets routine, talking a mile a minute, sweat running down his face, and homegirl was holding her tray and looking at him askance. Not many girls can do askance and keep their cheese fries from plunging off their trays. But this was why niggers were crazy about La Diablesse. She started walking away and Oscar yelled out super loud, "Well, talk anon!" And she shot back a "Sure," all larded with sarcasm. I waved him over. "So, how'd it go, Romeo?" He looked down at his hands. "I think I may be in love." "How can you be in love? You just met the bitch." "Don't call her a bitch," he said darkly. "Yeah," Melvin imitated. "Don't call her a bitch." You have to give it to Oscar. He didn't let up. He just kept hitting on her with absolutely no regard for self. In the halls, in front of the bathroom door, in the dining hall, on the buses, dude became ubiquitous. Pinned comic books to her door, for Christ's sake. In my universe, when a dork like Oscar pushes up on a girl like Jenny, he usually gets bounced faster than your Tia Daisy's rent checks. But Jenny must have had brain damage or been really into fat loser nerd boys, because by the end of February, she was actually treating him all civil and shit. Before I could wrap my brain around that one, I saw them hanging out together. In public. I couldn't believe my fucking eyes. And then came the day when I returned from my creative writing class and found La Diablesse and Oscar sitting in our room. They were just talking about Alice Walker, but still. Oscar looking like he'd just been asked to join the Jedi Order. Jenny, smiling beautiful. And me, I was speechless. Jenny remembered me all right. Looked at me with her cute smirking eyes and said, "You want me to get off your bed?" Her Jersey accent enough to knock the guff clean out of me. "Nah," I said. Picked up my gym bag and bolted like a bitch. When I got back from the weight room, Oscar was at his computer, on page a billion of his new novel. I said, "So what's up with you and Scary Pants?" "Nothing."
What the hell you two talk about?
Items of little note. Something about his tone made me realize that he knew about her scorching me. The fucker.
I said, well, good luck, Wow. I just hope she doesn't sacrifice you to Beelzebub or anything.
All March they hung out. I tried not to pay attention, but we were all in the same dorm, so it was hard not to. Later, Lola would tell me that the two of them even started going to movies together. They saw Ghost and this other terrible piece of ass called Hardware. Went to Franklin Diner afterward, where Oscar tried his best not to eat for three. I wasn't around for most of this nonsense. I was out chasing the pussy and delivering pool tables and out with the boys on the weekends. Did it kill me that he was spending time with such a fly bitch? Of course it did. I always thought of myself as the Kaneda of our dyad, but here I was playing Tetsuo. Jenny really put it on for Oscar. Liked to walk arm in arm with him and hug him every chance she got. Oscar's adoration like the light of a new sun. Being the center of a universe, something that suited her. She read him all her poetry. Thou art the muse of the muses, I heard him say, and showed him her little dumb sketches, which he fucking hung on our door, and told him all about her life, which he dutifully noted in his journal. Living with an aunt because her mom moved to Puerto Rico to be with her new husband when she was 7. Spent from 11 on up making runs into the village. Lived in a squat the year before she came to college. The Crystal Palace, it was called. Was I really reading my roommate's journal behind his back?
Of course I was.
Oh, but you should have seen the O. He was like I'd never seen him. Love, the Transformer. Started dressing up more, ironing his shirts every morning. Dug this wooden samurai sword out of his closet, and in the early morning stood out on the lawn of Demarest, bare-chested, slicing down a billion imaginary foes. Even started running again. Well, jogging. Oh, now you can run, I carped. And he saluted me with a brisk upsweep of his hand as he struggled past. I should have been happy for the Wow. I mean, honestly, who was I to begrudge Oscar a little action? Me, who was fucking with not one, not two, but three fine-ass bitches at the same time, and that wasn't even counting the side sluts I scooped at the parties and the clubs. Me, who had pussy coming out my ears. But of course I begrudged the motherfucker. A heart like mine, which never got any kind of affection growing up, is terrible above all things. Was then, is now. Instead of encouraging him, I scowled when I saw him with La Jeblesse. Instead of sharing my women wisdom, I told him to watch himself. In other words, I was a player hater. Me, the biggest player of them all. I shouldn't have wasted the energy. Jenny always had boys after her. Oscar, only a lull in the action. And one day I saw her out on the Demarest lawn talking to the tall punk kid who used to hang around Demarest, wasn't a resident, crashed with whatever girl would let him. Thin as Lou Reed and as arrogant. He was showing her a yoga thing and she was laughing. Not 2 days later I found Oscar in his bed crying. Yo, Holmes, I said, fingering my weight belt. What the hell is the matter with you?
Leave me alone, he lowed. Did she diss you?
She dissed you, didn't she?
Leave me alone, he yelled. Leave me alone!
Figured it would be like always. A week of mooning and then back to the riding. The thing that carried him. But it wasn't like always. I knew something was wrong when he stopped riding. Oscar never stopped riding. Loved riding the way I loved cheating. Just lay in bed and stared at the SDF-1. 10 days of him all fucked up. Of him saying shit like, I dream about oblivion like other people dream of good sex. Got me a little worried. So I copied his sister's number in Madrid and called her on the sly. Took me like a half dozen tries, and 2 million valleys before I got through.
What do you want?
Don't hang up, Lola. It's about Oscar. She called him that night, asked him what was going on, and of course he told her, even though I was sitting right there.
Mister, she commanded, you need to let it go.
I can't, he whimpered. My heart is overthrown.
You have to, and so on, until at the end of 2 hours he promised her that he would try.
Come on, Oscar, I said after giving him 20 minutes to stew. Let's go play some video games.
He shook his head unmoved. I will play Street Fighter no more.
Well, I said to Lola later on the phone.
I don't know, she said. He gets like this sometimes. What do you want me to do?
Just watch him for me, okay?
Never got the chance. 2 weeks later, La Jablesse gave Oscar the coup de friendship. He walked in on her while she was entertaining the punk, caught them both naked, probably covered with blood or something, and before she could even say, get out, he went berserk. Called her a whore and attacked her walls, tearing down her posters and throwing her books everywhere. I found out because some white girl ran up and said, excuse me, but your stupid roommate is going insane, and I had to bolt upstairs and put him in a headlock.
Oscar! I hollered, calm down! Calm down! Leave me the fuck alone!
He shrieked, trying to stomp down on my feet. It was pretty horrible. As for Punk Boy, apparently dude jumped right out the window and ran all the way to George Street, butt naked. That was Demarest for you. Never a dull fucking moment. To make a long story short, he had to attend counseling to keep from losing his housing. Couldn't go to the second floor for nothing. But now everybody in the dorm thought he was some kind of major psycho. The girls especially stayed away from him. As for La Jablesse, she was graduating that year, so a month later they relocated her to the river dorms and called it even. I didn't really see her again except once while I was on the bus and she was out on the street, walking into Scott Hall with these dominatrix boots. And that's how our year ended. Him vacated of hope and tapping at the computer, me being asked in the hall how I liked dorming with Mr. Crazy Man, and me asking back how their ass would like dorming with my foot. A lame couple of weeks. When it came time to re-up at the dorm, me and O didn't even talk about it. My boys were still stuck in their mom's cribs, so I had to take my chances with the lottery again, and this time, I hit the fucking jackpot. Ended up with a single in Frelinghuysen. When I told Oscar that I was leaving Demarest, he pulled himself out of his depression long enough to look astounded, like he was expecting something else. I figured, I stammered. But before I could say another word, he said, it's okay. And then, as I was turning away, he grabbed my hand and shook it very formally. Sir, it's been an honor. Oscar, I said. People asked me, did you see the signs? Did you? Maybe I did and just didn't want to think about it. Maybe I didn't. What the fuck does it really matter? All I knew was that I'd never seen him more unhappy. And there was a part of me that didn't care. That wanted out of there the same way I had wanted out of my hometown. On our last night as roommates, Oscar housed 2 bottles of orange Cisco I had bought him. You remember Cisco? Liquid crack, they used to call it. So you know Mr. Lightweight was fucked up.
To my virginity, Oscar shouted. Oscar, cool it, bro. People don't want to hear about all that.
You're right. They just want to stare at me.
Come on, tranquilízate.
he slumped.
I'm copacetic.
You ain't pathetic.
I said copacetic. Everybody, he shook his head, misapprehends me.
All the posters and books were packed, and it could have been the first day again if it hadn't been for how unhappy he was. On the real first day, he'd been excited, kept calling me by my full name until I told him, "It's Junior, Oscar, just Junior." I guess I knew I should have stayed with him. Should have sat my ass in that chair and told him that shit was going to be cool. But it was our last night and I was fucking tired of him. I wanted to fuck silly this Indian girl I had on Douglas, smoke a joint and then go to bed. "Fare thee well," he said as I left. "Fare thee well." What he did was this. Drank a third bottle of Cisco and then walked unsteadily down to the New Brunswick train station. With its crumbling facade and a long curve of track that shoots high over the Raritan. Even in the middle of the night, doesn't take much to get into the station, or to walk out into the tracks, which is exactly what he did. Stumbled out toward the river, toward Route 18. New Brunswick falling away beneath him, until he was 77 feet in the air. 77 feet precisely. From what he would later recall, he stood on that bridge for a good long time, watching the streaking lights of the traffic below, reviewing his miserable life, wishing he'd been born in a different body, regretting all the books he would never write, maybe trying to get himself to reconsider. And then the 4:12 express to Washington blew in the distance. By then he was barely able to stand. Closed his eyes, or maybe he didn't, and when he opened them there was something straight out of Ursula Le Guin standing by his side. Later, when he would describe it, he would call it the Golden Mongoose. But even he knew that wasn't what it was. It was very placid, very beautiful. Gold-limbed eyes that reached through you. Not so much in judgment or reproach, but for something far scarier. They stared at each other, it serene as a Buddhist, he in total disbelief. And then the whistle blew again and his eyes snapped open or closed, and it was gone. Dude had been waiting his whole life for something just like this to happen to him, had always wanted to live in a world of magic and mystery. But instead of taking note of the vision and changing his ways, the fuck just shook his swollen head. The train was nearer now, and so, before he could lose his courage, he threw himself down into the darkness. He had left me a note, of course, and behind it a letter each for his sister, his mother, and Jenny. He thanked me for everything. He told me I could have his books, his games, his movies, his special D10s. He told me he was happy to have been friends. He signed off, "Your compañera, Oscar Wow." If he'd landed on Route 18 as planned, it would have been lights out forever. But in his drunken confusion, he must have miscalculated. Or maybe, as his mother claims, he was being watched from up on high. Because the dude missed 18 proper and landed on the divider, which should have been fine. Those dividers on 18 are like concrete guillotines. Would have done him lovely. Burst him into intestinal confetti. Except that this one was one of those garden dividers that they plant shrubs on, and he hit the freshly tilled loam and not the concrete. Instead of finding himself in nerd heaven, where every nerd gets 58 virgins to roleplay with, he woke up in Robert Wood Johnson with two broken legs and a separated shoulder, feeling like, well, he'd jumped off the New Brunswick train bridge. I was there, of course, with his mother and his thuggish uncle, who took regular bathroom breaks to snort up. He saw us, and what did the idiot do? He turned his head and cried. His mother tapped him on his good shoulder. You'll be doing a lot more than crying when I get through with you.
A day later, Lola arrived from Madrid. Didn't have a chance even to say a word before her mother launched into the standard Dominican welcome.
So now you come, now that your brother's dying. If I'd known that's what it would take, I would have killed myself a long time ago.
Ignored her, ignored me. Sat next to her brother, took his hand.
Mister, she said, are you okay?
Shook his head. No.
It's been a long, long time. But when I think of her, I still see her at the hospital on that first day, straight from Newark Airport. Dark rings around her eyes. Her hair is tangled as a maenad. And yet, she still had taken the time, before appearing, to put on some lipstick and makeup.
I was hoping for some good energy, even at the hospital trying to get ass, but she blew me up instead.
Why didn't you take care of Oscar? She demanded. Why didn't you do it?
4 days later, they took him home. And I went back to my life, too. Headed home to my lonely mother and to tore up London Terrace. I guess if I'd been a real pal, I would have visited him up in Paterson like every week. But I didn't. What can I tell you? It was fucking summer and I was chasing down a couple of new girls, and besides, I had the job. Wasn't enough time, but what there really wasn't enough of was ganas. I did manage to call him a couple of times to check up on him. Even that was a lot, because I kept expecting his mother or sister to tell me that he was gone. But no, he claimed he was regenerated. No more suicide attempts for him. He was writing a lot, which was always a good sign. I'm going to be the Dominican Tolkien, he said. Only once did I drop in, and that was because I was in P-Town visiting one of my sucias. Not part of the plan, but then I just spun the wheel, pulled up to a gas station, made the call, and the next thing I knew I was at the house where he had grown up. His mother too sick to come out of her room, and him looking as thin as I'd ever seen him. Suicide suits me, he joked. His room, nerdier than him, if that was possible. X-wings and TIE fighters hanging from the ceilings. Mine and his sister's signatures the only real ones on his last cast. The right leg broken worse than the left. The rest were thoughtful consolations from Robert Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, Frank Herbert, and Samuel Delaney. His sister, not acknowledging my presence. So I laughed when she walked by the open door, asked loudly, "How's La Muda doing?"
"She hates being here," Oscar said.
"What's wrong with Paterson?"
I asked loudly.
"Hey, Muda, what's wrong with Paterson?"
"Everything,"
she yelled from down the hall. She was wearing these little running shorts. The sight of her leg muscles jiggling alone made the trip worth making. Me and Oscar sat in his room for a little bit, not saying much. I stared at all his books and his games, waited for him to say something. Must have known I wasn't going to let it slide.
"It was foolish," he said finally. "Ill-advised."
"You could say that twice. What the fuck were you thinking, oh?"
He shrugged miserably. "I didn't know what else to do."
"Dude, you don't want to be dead? Take it from me. No pussy is bad, but dead is like no pussy times 10.
It went like that for about half an hour. Only one thing sticks out. Right before I headed out, he said, "It was the curse that made me do it, you know."
"I don't believe in that shit, Oscar. That's our parents' shit."
"It's ours, too," he said.
"Is he going to be okay?" I asked Lola on the way out.
"I think so," she said, filling ice cube trays with faucet water.
He says he's going back to Demarest in the spring.
Is that a good idea?
She thought about it a second. That was Lola for you. I do, she said.
You know best.
I fished my keys out. So how's the fiancé? He's fine, she said blandly. Are you and Suri Jan still together?
Killed to even hear her name. Not for a long time.
And then we stood there and stared at each other. In a better world, I would have kissed her over the ice trays, and that would have been the end of all our troubles. But you know exactly what kind of world we live in.
It ain't no fucking Middle Earth.
I just nodded my head, said, "See you around, Lola," and drove home. That should have been the end of it, right? Just a memory of some nerd I once knew who tried to kill himself, nothing more, nothing more. But the De Leons, it turned out, weren't a clan you could just shake off. Not 2 weeks into senior year, he showed up at my dorm room to bring over his writings and to ask me about mine. I couldn't believe it. Last I heard, he was planning on subbing at his old high school, taking classes over at BCC. But there he was, standing at my door, sheepishly holding a blue folder.
"Hail and well met, Junior," he said.
"Oscar," I said in disbelief. He had lost even more weight and was trying his best to keep his hair trim and his face shaved. He looked, if you can believe it, good. Still talking space opera, though. Had just finished with the first of his projected quartet of novels, totally obsessed with it now. "May be the death of me," he sighed, and then he caught himself. "Sorry." Of course, nobody at Demarest wanted a room with him. What a surprise. We all know how tolerant the tolerant are. So when he returned in the spring, he'd have a double to himself. Not that it did him any good, he joked.
"Demarest won't be the same without your mesomorphic grimness," he said matter-of-factly.
"Ha," I said.
"You should definitely visit me in Patterson when you have a reprieve. I have a plethora of new Japanimation for your viewing pleasure."
"Definitely, bro," I said. "Definitely." I never did go by. I was busy, God's truth. Delivering pool tables, bringing the grades up, getting ready to graduate. And besides, that fall, a miracle happened. Suri Jan showed up at my door, looking more beautiful than I ever saw her. "I want us to try again."
Of course, I said yes, and went out and put a cuerno in her that very night. Dios mío.
Some niggers couldn't have gotten ass on Judgment Day. Me? I could not get ass, even when I tried. My negligence didn't stop O from visiting me every now and then with some new chapter and some new story of a girl he'd spotted on the bus, on the street, or in a class.
"Same old Oscar," I said.
"Yes,"
he said weakly.
"Same old me."
Rutgers was always a crazy place, but that last fall it seemed to be especially bugging. In October, a bunch of freshman girls I knew on Livingston got busted for dealing coke. Four of the quietest gorditas around. Like they say, los que menos corren, vuelan. On Bush, the lambdas started a fight with the alphas over some idiocy, and for weeks there was talk of a black-Latino war, but nothing ever happened. Everybody too busy throwing parties and fucking each other to scrap. That winter, I even managed to sit in my room long enough to write a story that wasn't too bad, about the woman who used to live in the patio behind my house in the DR. A woman everybody said was a prostitute, but who used to watch me and my brother while my mom and my abuelo were at work. My professor couldn't believe it. "I'm impressed. Not a single shooting or stabbing in the whole story."
Not that it helped any. I didn't win any of the creative writing prizes that year. I kinda had been hoping.
and then it was finals, and who of all people do I end up running into? Lola. I almost didn't recognize her, because her hair was ill long, and because she was wearing these cheap blocky glasses, the kind an alternative white girl would wear. Enough silver on her wrists to ransom the royal family, and so much leg coming out of her denim skirt, it just didn't seem fair. As soon as she saw me, she tugged down the skirt, not like it did much good. This was on the E-bus. I was on my way back from seeing a girl of zero note, and she was heading out to some stupid-ass farewell party for one of her friends. I slopped down next to her, and she said, "What's up?" Her eyes so incredibly big and empty of any guile. Or expectation, for that matter. "How have you been?" I asked. "Good. How about you?" "Just getting ready for break." "Merry Christmas." And then, just like a De Leon, she went back to reading her book. I poked at the book. "Introduction to Japanese. What the hell are you studying now? Didn't they throw you out of here already?" "I'm teaching English in Japan next year," she said matter-of-factly. "It's going to be amazing." Not "I'm thinking about" or "I've applied," but "I am." "Japan?" I laughed, a little mean. "What the hell is a Dominican going out to Japan for?" "You're right," she said, turning the page irritably. "Why would anyone want to go anywhere when they have New Jersey?" We let that sit for a sec. "That was a little harsh," I said. "My apologies." Like I said, it was December. My Indian girl Lily was waiting for me back on College Avenue, and so was Suriyan. But I wasn't thinking about either of them. I was thinking about the one time I'd seen Lola that year. She'd been reading a book in front of the Henderson Chapel with such concentration, I thought she might hurt herself. I'd heard from Oscar that she was living in Edison with some of her girlfriends, working at some office or another, saving money for her next big adventure. That day I'd seen her, I'd wanted to say hi, but I didn't have the balls. Figured she would ig me. I watched Commercial Avenue slide past, and there in the distance were the lights of Route 18. That was one of those moments that would always be Rutgers for me. The girls in front, giggling about some guy, her hands on those pages, nails all painted up in cranberry, my own hands like monster crabs. In a couple of months, I'd be back in London Terrace if I wasn't careful, and she'd be off in Tokyo or Kyoto or wherever she was going. Of all the chicks I'd run up on at Rutgers, of all the chicks I'd run up on ever, Lola was the one I'd never gotten a handle on. So why did it feel like she was the one who knew me best? I thought about Suriyan and how she would never talk to me again. I thought about my own fears of actually being good, because Lola wasn't Suriyan. With her, I'd have to be someone I'd never tried to be. We were reaching College Avenue. Last chance. So I made like Oscar and said, "Have dinner with me, Lola. I promise I won't try to take your panties off." "Yeah, right," she said, almost ripping her page in the turning. I covered her hand in mine and she gave me this frustrated, heart-wrenching look, like she was already on her way down with me and didn't for the life of her understand why. "It's okay," I said.
"No, it's fucking not okay. You're too short."
But she didn't take her hand away. We went to her place on Handy, and before I could really put a hurt on her, she stopped everything, dragged me up from her toto by my ears. "Why is this the face I can't seem to forget, even now after all these years? Tired from working, swollen from lack of sleep. A crazy mixture of ferocity and vulnerability that was and shall ever be Lola." She looked at me until I couldn't stand it anymore. And then she said, "Just don't lie to me, Junior." "I won't," I promised. "Don't laugh. My intentions were pure." Not much more to tell, except this. That spring, I moved back in with him. Thought about it all winter. Even at the very end, I almost changed my mind. Was waiting by his door in Demarest, and despite the fact that I'd been waiting all morning, at the very end, I still almost ran off. But then, I heard their voices on the stairwell, bringing up his things. I don't know who was more surprised, Oscar, Lola, or me. In Oscar's version, I raised my hand and said, "Malen." Took him a second to recognize the word. "Malen," he said finally. That fall after the fall was dark, I read in his journal. Dark. He was still thinking about doing it, but he was afraid. Of his sister mainly, but also of himself. Of the possibility of a miracle. Of an invincible summer. Reading and writing and watching TV with his mother. "If you try anything stupid," his mother swore, "I'll haunt you my whole life. You better believe it." "I do, senora," he reported, saying. "I do." Those months he couldn't sleep, and that's how he ended up taking his mother's car out for midnight spins. Every time he pulled out of the house, he thought it would be his last. Drove everywhere, got lost in Camden, found the neighborhood where I grew up, drove through New Brunswick just when the clubs were getting out, looking at everybody, his stomach killing him. Even made it down to Wildwood. Looked for the coffee shop where he'd saved Lola, but it had closed. Nothing had opened to replace it. One night he picked up a hitchhiker, an immensely pregnant girl. She barely spoke any English. Was a wetback Guatemalan with pits in her cheek. Needed to go to Perth Amboy, and Oscar, our hero, said,
"No te preocupas, te traigo."
"Que Dios te bendiga," she said, still looking ready to jump out of a window if need be. Gave her his number, just in case, but she never called. He wasn't surprised. Drove so long and so far on some nights that he would actually fall asleep at the wheel. One second he was thinking about his characters, and the next he'd be drifting, a beautiful, intoxicating richness, about to go all the way under, and then some last alarm would sound. Lola. Nothing more exhilarating, he wrote, than saving yourself by the simple act of waking. Part 2. Men are not indispensable, but Trujillo is irreplaceable. For Trujillo is not a man. He is a cosmic force. Those who try to compare him to his ordinary contemporaries are mistaken. He belongs to the category of those born to a special destiny. La Nación.
Of course I tried once more. It was even stupider than the first time. 14 months, and Abuela announced that it was time for me to return to Patterson, to my mother. I couldn't believe what she was saying. It felt like the deepest of treacheries to me. I wouldn't feel that again until I broke with you. "But I don't want to go," I protested. "I want to stay here." But she wouldn't listen. She held her hands in the air like there was nothing she could do. "It's what your mother wants, and it's what I want, and it's what's right." "But what about me?" "I'm sorry, hija." "That's life for you. All the happiness you gather to yourself, it will sweep away like it's nothing. If you ask me, I don't think there are any such things as curses. I think there is only life. That's enough." I wasn't mature. I quit the team. I stopped going to classes and speaking to all my girlfriends, even Rocio. I told Max that we were through, and he looked at me like I'd just shot him between the eyes. He tried to stop me from walking away, but I screamed at him, like my mother screams, and he dropped his hand like it was dead. I thought I was doing him a favor, not wanting to hurt him any more than was necessary. I ended up being really stupid those last weeks. I guess I wanted to disappear more than anything, and so I was trying to make it so. I fooled around with someone else. That's how messed up I was. He was the father of one of my classmates. Always after me, even when his daughter was around. So I called him. One thing you can count on in Santo Domingo. Not the lights, not the law. Sex. That never goes away. I didn't bother with the romance. I let him take me to a love motel on our first date. He was one of those vain politicos, a peledista, had his own big air-conditioned jipeta. When I pulled my pants down, you never saw anybody so happy. Until I asked him for $2,000. American, I emphasized. It's like Abuela says. Every snake always thinks it's biting into a rat until the day it bites into a mongoose. That was my big puta moment. I knew he had the money, otherwise I wouldn't have asked. And it's not like I was robbing from him. I think we did it like 9 times in total. So in my opinion, he got a lot more than he gave. Afterward, I sat in the motel and drank rum while he snorted from these little bags of coke. He wasn't much of a talker, which was good. He was always pretty ashamed of himself after we fucked, and that made me feel great. Complained that this was the money for his daughter's school, blah, blah, blah. Steal it from the state, I told him with a smile. I kissed him when he dropped me off at the house, only so that I could feel him shrink from me. I didn't talk to La Inca much those last weeks, but she never stopped talking to me. I want you to do well at school. I want you to visit me when you can. I want you to remember where you come from. She prepared everything for my departure. I was too angry to think about her, how sad she would be when I was gone. I was the last person to share her life since my mother. She started closing up the house like she was the one who was leaving. What? I said. You coming with me? No, hija. I'm going to my campo for a while. But you hate the campo. I have to go there, she explained wearily, if only for a little while. And then Oscar called, out of the blue, trying to make up now that I was due back. So you're coming home? Don't count on it, I said. Don't do anything precipitous. Don't do anything precipitous, I laughed. Do you ever hear yourself, Oscar? He sighed. All the time. Every morning I would wake up and make sure the money was still under my bed. $2,000 in those days could have taken you anywhere. And of course I was thinking Japan or Goa, which one of the girls at school had told me about. Another island, but very beautiful, she assured us. Nothing like Santo Domingo. And then, finally, she came. She never did anything quiet, my mother. She pulled up in a big black town car, not a normal taxi, and all the kids in the barrio gathered around to see what the show was about, my mother pretending not to notice the crowd. The driver, of course, was trying to pick her up. She looked thin and worn out, and I couldn't believe the taxista. Leave her alone, I said. Don't you have any shame? My mother shook her head sadly. Looked at La Inca. You didn't teach her anything. La Inca didn't blink. I taught her as well as I could. And then, the big moment. The one every daughter dreads. My mother looking me over. I'd never been in better shape, never felt more beautiful and desirable in my life. And what does the bitch say? Coño, Pero tú sí eres fea. Those 14 months, gone. Like they'd never happened. Now that I'm a mother myself, I realize that she could not have been any different. That's who she was. Like they say, plátano maduro no se vuelve verde. Even at the end, she refused to show me anything close to love. She cried not for me or for herself, but only for Oscar. Mi pobre hijo, she sobbed. Mi pobre hijo. You always think with your parents that at least at the very end something will change. Something will get better. Not for us. I probably would have run. I would have waited until we got back to the States. Waited like paja de arroz. Burning slow, slow, until they dropped their guard. And then one morning I would have disappeared. Like my father disappeared on my mother and was never seen again. Disappeared like everything disappears. Without a trace. I would have lived far away. I would have been happy, I'm sure of it. And I would never have had any children. I would let myself grow dark in the sun, no more hiding from it. Let my hair indulge in all its kinks, and she would have passed me on the street and never recognized me. That was the dream I had. But if these years have taught me anything, it is this. You can never run away. Not ever. The only way out is in. And that's what I guess these stories are all about. Yes, no doubt about it, I would have run. La Inca or not, I would have run. But then Max died. I hadn't seen him at all, not since the day of our breakup. My poor Max, who loved me beyond words, who said, I'm so lucky every time we fucked. It was not like we were in the same circles or the same neighborhood. Sometimes, when the peladista drove me to the moteles, I could swear that I saw Max zipping through the horrendous traffic of the midday, a film reel under his arm. I tried to get him to buy a backpack, but he said he liked it his way. My brave Max, who could slip between two bumpers the way a lie can slide between a person's teeth. What happened was that one day he miscalculated, heartbroken, I'm sure, and ended up being mashed between a bus bound for the Cibao and one bound for Baní, his skull shattering in a million little pieces, the film unspooling across the entire street. I only heard about it after they buried him. His sister called me. He loved you best of all, she sobbed. Best of all. The curse, some of you will say. Life is what I say. Life. You never saw anybody go so quiet. I gave his mother the money I'd taken from the peladista. His little brother Maxim used it to buy a yola to Puerto Rico, and the last I heard, he was doing good for himself there. He owned a little store, and his mother no longer lives in Los Tres Brazos. My Toto good for something after all. I will love you always, my abuela said at the airport. And then she turned away. It was only when I got on the plane that I started crying. I know this sounds ridiculous, but I don't think I really stopped until I met you. I know I didn't stop atoning. The other passengers must have thought I was crazy. I kept expecting my mother to hit me, to call me an idiota, a bruta, a fea, a malcriada, to change seats. But she didn't. She put her hand on mine and left it there. When the woman in front turned around and said, Tell that girl of yours to be quiet, she said, Tell that culo of yours to stop stinking. I felt sorriest for the viejo next to us. You could tell he'd been visiting his family. He had on a little fedora and his best press chacabana. It's okay, muchacha, he said, patting my back. Santo Domingo will always be there. It was there in the beginning, and it will be there at the end. For God's sake, my mother muttered, and then closed her eyes and went to sleep.
Chapter 5. Poor Abelard, 1944 to 1946.